and I'll give you exercises that will challenge some of your creative assumptions to make you stretch, get stronger, last longer. After all, you stretch before you jog, you loosen up before you work out, you practice before you play. It's no different for your mind. I will keep stressing the point about creativity being augmented by routine and habit. Get used to it. In these pages, a philosophical tug of war will periodically rear its head. It is the perennial debate, born in the Romantic era, between the beliefs that all creative acts are born of A, some transcendent, inexplicable Dionysian act of inspiration, a kiss from God on your brow that allows you to give the world the magic flute, or B, hard work. If it isn't obvious already, I come down on the side of hard work. That's why this book is called The Creative Habit. Creativity is a habit, and the best creativity is a result of good work habits. That's it in a nutshell. The film Amadeus, and the play by Peter Schaefer on which it's based, dramatizes and romanticizes the divine origins of creative genius. Antonio Salieri, representing the talented hack, is cursed to live in the time of Mozart. The gifted and undisciplined genius who writes as though touched by the hand of God. Salieri recognizes the depths of Mozart's genius and is tortured that God has chosen someone so unworthy to be his divine creative vessel. Of course this is hogwash. There are no natural geniuses. Mozart was his father's son. Leopold Mozart had gone through an arduous education, not just in music, but also in philosophy and religion. He was a sophisticated, broad-thinking man, famous throughout Europe as a composer and pedagogue. This is not news to music lovers. Leopold had a massive influence on his young son. I question how much of a natural this young boy was. Genetically, of course, he was probably more inclined to write music than, say, play basketball, since he was only 3 feet tall when he captured the public's attention. But his first good fortune was to have a father who was a composer and a virtuoso on the violin, who could approach keyboard instruments with skill, and who, upon recognizing some ability in his son, said to himself, "This is interesting. He likes music. Let's see how far we can take this." Leopold taught the young Wolfgang everything about music, including counterpoint and harmony. He saw to it that the boy was exposed to everyone in Europe who was writing good music or could be of use in Wolfgang's musical development. Destiny, quite often, is a determined parent. Mozart was hardly some naive prodigy who sat down at the keyboard and, with God whispering in his ears, let the music flow from his fingertips. It's a nice image for selling tickets to movies, but whether or not God has kissed your brow, you still have to work. Without learning and preparation, you won't know how to harness the power of that kiss. Nobody worked harder than Mozart. By the time he was 28 years old, his hands were deformed because of all the hours he had spent practicing, performing, and gripping a quill pen to compose. That's the missing element in the popular portrait of Mozart. Certainly, he had a gift that set him apart from others. He was the most complete musician imaginable, one who wrote for all instruments, in all combinations, and no one has written greater music for the human voice. Still, few people, even those hugely gifted, are capable of the application and focus that Mozart displayed throughout his short life. As Mozart himself wrote to a friend, "People err who think my art comes easily to me. I assure you, dear friend, nobody has devoted so much time and thought to composition as I. There is not a famous master whose music I have not industriously studied through many times." Mozart's focus was fierce. It had to be for him to deliver the music he did in his relatively short life, under the conditions he endured, riding in coaches and delivering scores just before the curtain went up. Dealing with the distractions of raising a family and the constant need for money. Whatever scope and grandeur you attach to Mozart's musical gift, his so-called genius, his discipline and work ethic were its equal. I'm sure this is what Leopold Mozart saw so early in his son, who as a 3-year-old, one day impulsively jumped up on the stool to play his older sister's harpsichord, and was immediately smitten. Music quickly became Mozart's passion, his preferred activity. I seriously doubt that Leopold had to tell his son for very long, "Get in there and practice your music." The child did it on his own. More than anything, this book is about preparation. In order to be creative, you have to know how to prepare to be creative. No one can give you your subject matter, your creative content. If they could, it would be their creation and not yours. But there's a process that generates creativity, and you can learn it. And you can make it habitual. There's a paradox in the notion that creativity should be a habit. We think of creativity as a way of keeping everything fresh and new, while habit implies routine and repetition. That paradox intrigues me because it occupies the place where creativity and skill rub up against each other. It takes skill to bring something you've imagined into the world, to use words to create believable lives, to select the colors and textures of paint to represent a haystack at sunset, to combine ingredients to make a flavorful dish. No one is born with that skill. It is developed through exercise, through repetition, through a blend of learning and reflection that is both painstaking and rewarding. And it takes time. Even Mozart, with all his innate gifts, his passion for music and his father's devoted tutelage, needed to get 24 youthful symphonies under his belt before he composed something enduring with number 25. If art is the bridge between what you see in your mind and what the world sees, then skill is how you build that bridge. That's the reason for the exercises. They will help you develop skill. Some might seem simple. Do them anyway.